The following podcast is a Super Network production with your hosts, Super Marcy.
It was on regular rotation most weekends. I don't even know how many times I've seen Stand By Me, but it's been many.
The terrible Australian, Be Jermaine.
And he pretty much just yells out, misery's alive, misery's alive. Oh, this whole house is going to be full of romance. Oh, I'm going to go put on some Liberace records. I don't know why that line just killed me for some reason.
It contains coarse and explicit language.
There's some serious going on. And here I'm like, the what is this? Why?
Mature themes.
King himself and also Mick Garrison, how they sort of stage how this virus sort of spreads and everything, was just very eerie and very unsettling for me.
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
For more, please visit supermarcy.com and show your support at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Enjoy the show.
G'day everyone, this is B. Jermaine, aka The Terrible Aussie, and welcome back to episode 131 of the King's Own Podcast, the podcast where we dissect every film and TV adaptation of the works of author Stephen King. And with me, as always, is my very King-loving co-host, the one, the only, Super Marcy. Hello, Marcy, how are you?
Hello, and from here forth, I shall be called Super Marcy Queen.
Well, I mean, I will call you that, but we shouldn't say it. But I mean, we should say it.
We actually should say it. I should be acknowledged for the queen to the king that I am.
You can be Stephanie Queen. There you go.
Stephanie Queen.
Out there in the multiverse, there is a female version of Stephen King called Stephanie Queen, but let's not go into that right now because that leads down a whole different rabbit hole.
It does. And if you want to go down that rabbit hole, listen to one of the recent episodes of the Stephen King's Book Club podcast where we talk about multiple realities and universes in the Kindle book you are or you're.
I may have to like buy the audio book version of that so I can find out exactly what the title of that story is.
That might be an idea. We should have looked into that, but sadly, no. Anyway.
But Marcy, we are not alone on this podcast. We have a very special guest who has come back to join us after appearing on episode 29, of which we talked about the films A Good Marriage and Mercy. And he's back to join us for hopefully be a better set of films this time. He's a film critic and author of the book, A Cut Below, A Celebration of B-Horror Movies. And that, of course, is our good friend, Scott Drummond. Hello, Scott, and welcome back to the King Zone.
Thank you very much, Bede and Super Marcy, for having me. And yes, I just want to say right off the bat, I don't know what I did the last time to be so rudely disparaged with those two films, but... I'd like to thank you for having me back for some redemption, as it were.
Ooh,
with these two, because they're definitely in a different category.
Oh, definitely. Well, I think it only made sense that we would bring you back on an episode in which we talked about, some better Stephen King adaptations. So I think this is the perfect one to do that for. And I'm excited for this episode because this is actually going to be a two-part episode of the show, because we're going to be looking over this episode and the next one, the Stephen King adaptations of filmmaker Frank Darabont.
Yes, indeed. And this is one that we've had in the works for a little while, and of course, scheduling and da-da-da. So we're finally here. I'm sure people were wondering, where are some of these heavy hitters from Frank Darabont? Well, here they are, finally. A two-part extravaganza, so stay tuned for part two coming at a later date, but we're here for part one, so let's freaking go, man.
Indeed. And for part one, of course, we're going to be talking about probably the most famous Stephen King adaptation from Frank Darabont, and that, of course, is The Shawshank Redemption. But before we get to that, we're going to be also talking about his little scene 1983 Dollar Baby short film, The Woman in the Room. So I'm excited to talk about both of these today for part one of the show. And we might as well get straight to it and talk about our very first film for this episode, which, of course, is Frank Darabont's Dollar Baby short film from 1983, The Woman in the Room.
Ma? don't think you better see me today, Johnny. I'm not so good today. Maybe I'll be better tomorrow.
What's the matter?
It itches. I itch all over. I've never been in a fix like this before. I can't move anything and my nose itches. Isn't that a pitiful way to be, with your nose itching and not able to scratch it?
Mama?
I think I'm crying. I don't mean to in front of you. I wish I was out of this. I'd do anything to be out of this.
Don't say that, Mom.
It's true. I wish it were over. I feel so much pain.
The doctor said the operation would take your pain away.
It's still there. I can feel it. Doctor says it shouldn't, but I do.
Maybe I could talk to him again.
He might listen to you, Johnny.
Do you like a smoke?
Could I have a drink of water first? I'm dry as a bone.
Sure. Brought something from your house, from your medicine chest. It's for the pain.
Thank you, Johnny. What is it?
It's aspirin.
Which was written and directed by Frank Darabont, based on the short story by Stephen King. This film stars Michael Cornelison, I probably butchered your last name, so please forgive me, Dee Coxton, Bob Runson, George Russell, and Brian Libby. And the plot summary for this film, which I am reading off IMDb, is: she is incurably ill, but she cannot die. Only her son, a lawyer, could bring her relief. When he decides to do so, it starts his personal nightmare. Now, for all those who don't remember, the Dollar Baby Shorts, which unfortunately, though, has ended its quite a long decades reign out there. I'll say it again, sorry. Now, for all those who don't remember, the Dollar Baby Shorts were, of course, short films that are all based on works by Stephen King that actually Stephen King actually gave permission to up-and-coming filmmakers who were interested in adapting his work to only pay a dollar to adapt any of his short stories into short films. And this was a program that began in the early 80s and unfortunately, and sadly I should add, had just finished late last year. So we have covered quite a few on this show in the past. And this one, of course, is definitely one of the most well-known ones out there, given that it was the first Stephen King adaptation done by Frank Darabont, years before he would start making his feature film work on Stephen King adaptations. The question is, though, what do we think of his Dollar Baby Short adaptation of The Woman in the Room? And Marcy, your thoughts on this short film?
Yes, so the short film is from the short story is from the Night Shift collection. And I believe The Woman in the Room was released, the short film, I should say, the Dollar Baby short film was released alongside one we previously talked about with The Boogeyman. And that was probably where I actually really knew about this more, because I know you had mentioned, oh yes, that Frank Darabont did a short Stephen King film in the early 80s, and we'll cover that eventually on the show, but I wasn't all that familiar. And I am slowly making my way through the stories of Stephen King on the other podcast. So there are a lot of ones I haven't yet read or seen. There's a lot of these Dollar Babies we haven't seen, can't see, because not all of them are out there to watch. So for The Woman in the Room, I haven't read the short story. I didn't actually know what the short story was about, and I didn't know until I watched the short film. It's my first experience with The Woman in the Room, and I'm very curious to read the short story now. And it is a really intriguing 30-minute short film, and certainly you can see signs of a writer slash director with Frank Darabont that he had a really good eye for adapting a story. And I don't know if it's accurate, any of that, but what he accomplished with this short, I think, is really interesting. It's a really intriguing one. And it is kind of a sad, but also bittersweet kind of story. And what I think brings this all together is the main performances with the character of John and the mother from Michael Cornelison, I apologize if I pronounce that wrong, and Dee Croxton. And we see that the mother is incredibly sick and he wants to help put her out of that. I think it's the part where we actually see visually his nightmares, is that it sort of takes this interesting turn, and it is very nightmarish. It's very well done. And when the film comes to a close with what's happened, it certainly makes you wonder, but at the same time, you feel like the mother is now at peace. So it is one of those bittersweet stories. And I honestly wouldn't expect anything less from a young Frank Darabont with this. So I, for like a short film on Stephen King, it's very damn good. Personally, I think I liked the Boogeyman short a little bit better, but that's not to take away from this, because it is very solid and absolutely worth watching.
Scott, your thoughts on The Woman in the Room?
Well, to start off, I was kind of in a similar position as Marcy, a story that I've known about for years and years and decades, but have never read still. And as far as viewing this short film, it's as fresh as, about 2 hours ago. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Again, I did not know what to expect at all. Did not read a summary on the story or anything. So I went in with completely fresh eyes. Not that there's any twists or turns here. And again, that will throw you off. It is a Stephen King story, but sometimes, and I guess the more that you read Stephen King, the more you'll come to this conclusion that you can't peg him down to any kind of certain thing. You can see how Darabont connects with this material. It's not dissimilar in some ways to what we deal with in Shawshank. The difference, I think, there's a big difference thematically, is that Shawshank is about holding on to hope like a life preserver. And The Woman in the Room is kind of about the absence of that hope and how to find your way through when you don't have that and things seem dim. So I will agree with you there, Marcy, too. It is kind of a bittersweet resolution to the story, but at the end of the day, the mom isn't in any more peace and the son gets to get some as well. So yeah, I liked it. I liked it quite a bit. And it's really well made. I mean, you're clearly dealing with a filmmaker here who has he's not winging it. He has very clear intentions and they come through very clearly, which I think is kind of a Darabont trademark.
Yeah, well, like both of you, I've heard about the short story for quite a while now. And I think the only reason why I've always known of it is because of the Frank Darabont connection. And I know when Darabont started working on his feature film adaptations of King's work, I'd always hear The Woman in the Room brought up in passing as well, since that was the first adaptation he'd worked on of Stephen King's work. So I was very curious to finally get around to watching the short. And I think it's interesting that this short was paired up with The Boogeyman on some home media releases, because they're two completely different short films. Of course, The Boogeyman is a full-blown horror story, while The Woman in the Room is this this sort of moving drama about the relationship between this mother and son. And the mother, of course, is dying and it is in a lot of pain, and how the son is conflicted about what he wants to do. Does he want to see his mother continue to be in pain, or does he want to kind of take matters into his own hands and euthanize her in a way with the help of some pills? So the nightmarish aspects of the film, which do come every now and again during the short film, I think are really telling of what the character's going through and the sort of the struggles and the confliction that is happening in his mind. And then, of course, when he meets with the prisoner played by Brian Libby, who's an actor who we're going to be talking about a lot over these next two episodes, because he's appeared in all of Frank Darabont's films. Like, I think that conversation with him, because the lawyer asks him about death and what it's like to kill someone and how does it affect you emotionally and mentally. And I think kind of having that conversation with him, that is what kind of sets him on this road to finally bring some peace to his mother. It's a pretty simple story. Like, there's no big twists or revelations or anything like that. It's just a very simple story of a son and his mother, and the son doing whatever he takes to help his mother in her hour of need. And it is quite an emotional short as well. And you could definitely tell, I mean, I don't know how personal of a story this was for Stephen King when he wrote it, but you could definitely tell there's a lot of it. Just feels very personal in terms of how it's written and how the characters interact with each other. Even in this short, you could definitely tell that Frank Darabont clearly has talent as a filmmaker, and it just shines through a lot in this Dollar Baby short. And you could definitely see why he would go on to have the massive career he would have later on down the track. So overall, I really, really like this short a lot. And I would suggest people, if they have never seen The Woman in the Room, definitely check it out. It's a really compelling and beautifully done short.
Yeah, it's definitely worth watching. And going back to what you mentioned earlier with the prisoner character and the John character having the conversation, like it's a very like the conversations about what it's like to kill someone, like coming from someone who's in prison to somebody who's essentially has been asked to help with euthanasia. It's a very different and complex subject. And I think that a lot of parts of the story, I think, certainly give weight to the argument that you should be able to die peacefully. It is very much a stark contrast of what it's like to kill someone if you're doing it as a mercy or if you're doing it out of cold blood. So it certainly has a lot in there with some philosophical elements, but it actually really comes together really well as a whole. And like I said, I think it's where we see like the visual representations of the nightmares where it really, like on that visual level, gets you in the mindset of the character. But I think it's just really, really well done as well.
Oh, definitely.
Counselor, good of you to come.
Sorry, I'm late.
That's okay. I ain't going nowhere.
Care to join me?
Jeez, man, you look like shit. What, you got some broad keeping you up nights?
No, not exactly. I've just been a little preoccupied.
What with?
My mother. She's dying.
Of what?
Cancer. It's abdominal cancer.
Tough break.
Yeah, I guess it is.
Well, what are they doing for her?
Well, not a hell of a lot, you ask me. They gave her a chordotomy yesterday.
Chordotomy? Yeah, I know about those. It's supposed to take away the pain.
How'd you know that?
Yeah, a buddy of mine and I got both his legs blown to shit by a booby trap. The problem was, he was lying in a puddle of mud for about an hour before we could get to him. So by the time I pulled him into a chopper, why, he had maggots crawling under his skin. Gangrene started killing him. Slowly. The pain was just too much, so they gave him a cordotomy. Stuck a needle in his brain and just short-circuited his pain. Short-circuited just about everything else with it.
That's what they did to my mother.
Too bad.
She can't walk anymore. She says she still has pain.
And on a filmmaking level, like I said, it's beautifully well handled. The score is really good. Like, I hope one day we do get a more cleaned up version of this short film, because you can definitely tell that it is really well handled in a lot of ways. But since it hasn't basically had any type of restoration or anything like that in the immediate years since it came out on VHS, I think it'd be a good one to kind of show people like Frank Darabont's roots and how he is definitely one, even as early as this one, kind of show he's definitely one of the best filmmakers who really gets Stephen King and what makes his work click with audiences and readers. And he really knows how to get to the heart of King's work, and you can sense that a lot in this short.
Well, I mean, I think he taps into, better than just about anyone, the connective tissue between the characters and how they interact with each other, and as people do in real life. He has a true empathy for that with King's material. Now, in the wrong hands, and we've seen it happen, sometimes that same material can come across as, say, corny or sentimental, depending on how it's handled. There's an intelligence here. The visual representation is really cool. For me, my favorite parts were the dialogue moments, the scene between Libby and Johnny. I was riveted. To me, that's a combination of things. Libby is just rewatching Shawshank not very recently and seeing this and other work he's done. He was one of our great character actors that never got his due, as it were, while you're around. So it's a combination of that and the gentleman who plays Johnny and the writing between the dialogue between the two characters. It's just rich without overstating it.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It's a very understated little short, and one that I think is what makes it as effective as it is, because of taking that sort of less is more approach with how it tackles the story.
I agree.
I guess that could be a wrap on this conversation of the short film, The Woman in the Room. And Marcy, your final thoughts and rating on the short?
Yeah, I give it 3.5 out of 5. And I certainly recommend people check it out, track this one down. It's a really interesting one to see. And it's always interesting with a filmmaker that you really like and enjoy their work to see some of the earlier stuff and to see where they came from. And I'm very curious to read the short story as well. And we'll get into some things about a story to film adaptation with the next one, but it would be interesting to see how it compares, what changes were made. I'd be curious. So, yeah.
Scott, your final thoughts and rating out of 5 for the short.
I would probably give it the same as Marcy, a 3.5. I think without that dialogue, I would probably have it as a 3, as a promising debut. It's more than that because of that, and it's kind of a nice signal flare of an up-and-coming terrific King talent specifically.
Definitely. And I'm actually going to go just a tad higher. I'm going to give this short 4 out of 5. I don't know what it was about this short, but it really affected me as I was watching it. But I suppose, like, I'm one of those people when it comes to films or stories that are about families, particularly between a child and their parent, like, those type of stories are just very emotional for me. And I just found this one particularly compelling. And like you both already stated, it's a very simple story. It's a very understated story, but I think that's what kind of gives the short its power. And again, it kind of just shows that Frank Darabont has talent as a filmmaker and really understands the work of Stephen King. So we'll move right along to our next film, which of course is the big one for this episode, And that, of course, is the 1994 film The Shawshank Redemption.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard all the evidence. I submit that this was not a hot-blooded crime of passion. Consider this. A revolver holds 6 bullets, not 8. That means that he fired the gun empty and then stopped to reload.
By the power vested in me by the state of Maine, I hereby order you to serve 2 life sentences back to back, one for each of your victims. So be it.
Send you here for life? That's exactly what they take.
I believe in 2 things. Discipline.
Help me, Dad!
And the Bible. Here you'll receive both.
Andy came to Shawshank Prison in 1947.
Why'd you do it?
I didn't, since you ask.
You can fit right in.
I must admit, I didn't think much of Andy first time I laid eyes on him. He had a quiet way about him. A walk and a talk that just wasn't normal around here.
There are places in the world that aren't made out of stone. There's something inside they can't touch.
What are you talking about?
Hope.
Let me tell you something, my friend. Hope is a dangerous thing.
Damn it, Dufresne, you're putting me behind!
Hope can drive a man insane.
You better be sick or dead in there, I kid you not!
I better get used to that idea.
Oh, my holy God.
I guess it comes down to a simple choice, really. Get busy living, or get busy dying.
Get busy living, or get busy dying. That's damn right.
Which was written and directed, once again, by Frank Darabont, based on the novella Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption by Stephen King. This film stars Tim Robbins, Morgan Freeman, Bob Gunton, William Sadler, Clancy Brown, Gil Bellows, Brian Libby, Jeffrey DeMunn, and James Whitmore. And the plot summary for this film, which I am reading off IMDb, is... Over the course of several years, 2 convicts form a friendship, seeking consolation and eventually redemption through basic compassion. What can we say about The Shawshank Redemption that hasn't already been said so much? But I think what's interesting before we get to our thoughts on it is the kind of how this film became a classic as it is, because I think we all know the story that the film, of course, was released in September 1994. And to say this movie was a bomb is a complete understatement. Even though it had really good reviews, it pretty much failed at the box office and was almost completely forgotten about until the 1994 Academy Awards came along and nominated the film for 7 Oscars, including Best Picture. And then once the film came out on video around the same time and people took notice that, oh, what is this movie I'd never heard of before getting all these Oscar nominations? I might as well go down to the video shop and rent it out. And of course, the film became a massive hit on video and in the 30 years since its release, it has now become one of the greatest films of all time. And for quite a while, it was the number one film of all time on IMDb's top 250 film chart. So it's kind of interesting how this film kind of developed a reputation over time. And it kind of shows that, yes, a film can even be a flop on its first release, but it can become a classic down the track. But the question is, though, what do we think of The Shawshank Redemption? And Marcy, your thoughts on this film?
To me, The Shawshank Redemption is a perfect film. It really is. It should have won all those Oscars. I'm not going to mince my words here. It absolutely deserves every kind of accolade and praise. It's a perfect and just beautiful film. It's one that I discovered probably a couple of years after it came out. I read the short story, Different Seasons, which it's in is one of, if not maybe my favorite book. And one of the really interesting things as a big fan of the novella is how the film, I think, it's a rare case of the film actually elevating the material. And I would argue that that was done with Stand By Me and The Body, where that film really took the material and elevated it to something. And I feel like The Shawshank Redemption does that, and that it's a fantastic novella. But what I think in part of the story that Frank Darabont, I think, was aware of is rather than, say, these characters going through a number of wardens, let's stick with the one warden and have that as an ongoing arc of a story. And I think that really, really works. And one of the other things that I think just adds to this perfect ending is in the short story, it just leaves us as Red finds the letter and reads the letter, but we get the little extra that we know Red and Andy meet again. And I think it's just one of the most beautiful and perfect endings. Like, you want to know what that, you would watch them for hours just trying to build a boat or something. It's just, they're just wonderfully fleshed out and wonderfully played characters. And like, it's an insane cast and they're insane performances. Andy is just so well played by Tim Robbins. He's kind of exactly what you'd picture and how he acts, but there's definitely more behind the cold demeanor you first see with him. And I mean, Morgan Freeman oozes charisma. Like, there's no denying that. And yeah, the character was a redheaded Irishman in the story, and Frank Darabont was like, yeah, Morgan Freeman is pretty good for this character. So it's like, yeah, cool. Like, that is awesome. And it's cute that there is the line, maybe it's because I'm Irish. It's just, it works so well. But you've got Clancy Brown as Captain Hadley, and yeah, he's a dickhead of a guard, but he's probably the one you don't hate, as weird as that sounds. And I think it has to do with the guards, I guess, listening to Andy when he talks, and then they're like, well, this guy is valuable to us, let's beat the shit out of Boggs, played by Mark Ralston, who was making life hell for poor Andy. So you kind of feel a bit of justification in some of the things that Hadley does. But I just, again, it's the performance. And again, I couldn't picture anybody else as the warden. Bob Gunton just nailed that role. He's an absolute asshole, but he has a demeanor about himself. There's so many things like to say, like James Whitmore as Brooks is so fantastic. And I don't know how anyone isn't a blubbering mess after Brooks' letter is read and they know what's happened and we see what happens. It's so heartbreaking, but it's a sad truth as well. And Gil Bellows as Tommy, another heartbreaking character arc that really hits hard, but again, it's necessary for this story to really kick into gear. But then supporting actors like William Sadler and, as we mentioned earlier, Brian Libby, everyone is just so good in the film, and there's so many beautiful moments. And I've seen this film so many times, I love it so much, I can recite so many things. I love the narration, it adds something beautiful to it. The scene where Andy gets the records and plays the opera, it's just such a beautiful scene. There's so many things that just capture it. But again, I think the scene where they wake up and they think they're going to find Andy dead in the cell, but he's not there. And when he throws the piece through the poster and that whole reveal comes through, it's just, it's so wonderful. It's so satisfying. I don't care what anybody says. I think The Shawshank Redemption is one of the just most perfect and beautiful films ever made. And it's somehow as grand, like as an adaptation, I think it brings more to that source material, which is very rare to find. And in, especially with Stephen King adaptations, I would argue there's only a very, very, very few that have actually elevated that material. And Shawshank is one of them. Stand By Me is one of them. And I'm going to stop rambling. Otherwise, I'll be here for 3 hours talking about how much I love this movie.
Scott, your thoughts on The Shawshank Redemption. What can you add that hasn't already been said multiple times.
Oh, multiple times by me in my one freaking rambling.
Shawshank, I saw not when it first came out in the theater, but on video, like most people did. Not usually the kind of movie that I'm drawn to necessarily, but Stephen King, that cast, I had to watch. I had not read the novella. And I really enjoyed it in the 90s as a fella in his young 20s. 30 years later, when I watched it a couple weeks ago, when you're dancing a little closer to the horizon, a lot of the themes, the older you get, a lot of the themes hit closer to home. Mortality, purpose, hope, which is at the central thing of this movie is hope in whatever form that takes and whatever situation you're in. It's this movie could not be any clearer without that hope. You do not have Andy sanding down a boat on the beach in Mexico. You do not have Red following him out and embracing at the end. So it's a movie that for me has hit way harder in my 50s now as just one of the richest movies that I've encountered that deals with, I think, mortality and your point to being here, if we have one. It's just, it's one of those, it's, I can't disagree with Marcy. It's pretty much as close to perfect for me too now as a movie can get. And that's not even talking the technical terms from watching The Woman in the Room to this film that just pulsates with life and anguish and terror and excitement and horror, hope and love. There's a clear-headedness, I think, to the messaging in the movie that I really like too. He's Darabont, like King, is a tremendous optimist and he's not afraid to show it. Now, again, like I was saying, in the wrong hands, that can turn into, you can be in Hallmark land fairly damn quickly in the wrong hands. But you have Morgan Freeman doing this narration, which is like wrapping yourself up in the warmest word blanket that you possibly could. And it just, everything lands perfectly in the movie, from the smallest role to the leads, the direction, the production, everything. It's just, it's Shawshank.
Yep, definitely. Why can I add to what has already been said? I guess The Shawshank Redemption is definitely a film that the first time you watch it, you really enjoy it. But the more times you see it, the older you get, the more and more you appreciate it. Not just to the point of either loving it or considering it to be one of the greatest films ever made. But I feel like when you watch this movie at a different time in your life, it just hits you differently each time. And I think what's great about this film is it's definitely one of the best films ever made about male friendships. And I think the core friendship between the characters of Red and Andy is just brilliantly handled. And you really buy that these two men, who are completely different the first time they meet each other, and Red, of course, didn't, as he says in classic Morgan Freeman narration, didn't really think much of Andy the first time he met him. But over the course of the 20 years of being in this prison together, you really get the sense of their friendship growing and the love that there is between them. And once these two men finally meet up again at the very last scene, and we see them embracing each other in that final shot on the beach, your heart just can't help but soar and also just feel very moved by it. And I think with this film, it really, I think I have heard a lot of people compare this film to Frank Capra, and I can definitely see that as well. And some people, of course, would scoff at that, mainly because when people think of Frank Capra, they think, oh, he's a very sentimental filmmaker, and he's very cheesy when it comes to the emotions of his films. But I think a lot of people tend to forget, if you actually watch a lot of Frank Capra's work, for most part, all of these films are pretty dark in terms of the first two halves until it actually gets to the more uplifting stuff in the third act. So you get all these first two acts of the film where we see Andy trying to survive in the prison system and how difficult of an experience he has, especially with one of the prison gangs, the sisters, and how much they, over the course of a few years, abuse and attack him on over and over again until, of course, events happen that stop that. Like, this film really does a good job at showing the darkness of what life is like in a prison. But then, of course, as it progresses and gets to the third act, it becomes more this story of resilience and survival, and with the character of Andy knowing of his innocence and doing whatever it takes to break free and to get out of that prison. Well, I think what's interesting, though, about this film, about the characters of Andy and Red, is I believe Andy is the main character, but Red is the main protagonist of this story, because with Red, we're seeing all this through his eyes and how he, over the course of the story, along with the other prisoners, on how Andy kind of changes the world that they are in within this prison. And I have definitely seen, because there's definitely a film that I know over the years, some people definitely have seen a lot of Christ-like qualities in the character of Andy, or this is a film that kind of has an interesting spin on spiritualism. And I think you can definitely see that as you're watching the film. But I think at the end of the day, what I think is great about this film is it's just a very hopeful film about resilience and redemption and changing as people, especially when you meet somebody who can just change your whole outlook on your life in so many ways. And I just think it's just so beautifully handled. It is a perfect film through and through. There's so many great moments, so much great dialogue, and the performances are all fantastic. I particularly love Morgan Freeman's performance in particular, especially in that, because over the course of the film, we kind of see the character of Red going through his parole hearings and how his character changes from each one until we get to the final one, which I think is
the final one is so good. It's so good. And when he's just like, I don't give a shit. I'm like, yeah, we feel that, Red. Sorry, Beat, cutting you off.
Yeah, that's all right. Well, I mean, it's just a perfect scene because, again, you see the growth of the character of Red and how he changes from the very first time we see him getting his parole hearing to now. But also just that whole scene in terms of its dialogue is just so beautifully done. And I really like that this film also captures the passage of time.
Really, oh, yeah. Really, you see everybody well age well as it goes through. But going back to the novella with Rita Hayworth and The Shawshank Redemption, the subtitle is Hope Springs Eternal. And that the hope is the thing that is through the novella and through the film. It is this central thing of situations can be really bad, but you sort of need to have hope to get through it. And you really see that shine through in the film, that there is this underlying hope, even when things feel absolutely ridiculous. It's like they don't feel that hope when they think, oh, Andy's just, he's going to off himself tonight. The fact that Andy escaped offers this new hope of something. It's not necessarily saying, oh, you should go and escape prison. It is metaphorical for life that there is a hope that is should always be there.
I'm Andy Dufresne.
Wife-killing banker. Why'd you do it?
I didn't, since you ask.
You're gonna fit right in. Everybody in here is innocent, and you know that? Hey, what you in here for?
Didn't do it. Lawyer fucked me.
Rumor has it you're a real cold fish. You think your shit smells sweeter than most. Is that right?
What do you think?
I'll tell you the truth. I had made up my mind.
I understand you're a man that knows how to get things.
I'm known to locate certain things from time to time.
I wonder if you might get me a rock hammer.
A what?
A rock hammer.
What is it and why?
What do you care?
Well, if it was a toothbrush, I wouldn't ask questions. I'd just quote a price. But then a toothbrush is a non-lethal object, isn't it?
Fair enough. Rock hammer is about 6 or 7 inches long. Looks like a miniature pickaxe.
Pickaxe?
For rocks.
Rocks. Quartz?
Quartz. Some mica. Shale. Limestone.
So?
So I'm a rock hound. At least I was in my old life. I'd like to be again on a limited basis.
Or maybe you'd like to sink your toe into somebody's skull.
No, sir. I have no enemies here.
No? Wait a while. Folks who run this joint love surprise inspections. They find it, you're gonna lose it. They do catch you with it, you don't know me. You mention my name, we'd never do business again. Not for shoelaces or a stick of gum. Now, you got that?
I understand. Thank you, Mr.
Red. Name's Red.
Red. Why do they call you that?
Maybe it's because I'm Irish.
And I don't think that's necessarily a bad or awful message. It's a lot of things that it's something we need in life. And yeah, I don't know if we're adding anything new. I'm sure people have spoken about this at length and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I'm probably sounding like a moron. But anyway.
But I also think, like, even on a technical level, the film is just so perfect. Like, Roger Deakins' cinematography is sublime, particularly the scenes when Andy is playing the classical music over the loudspeaker, or even that shot when Andy's bus is going to the prison the first time. It's that long helicopter shot around the entire prison. Like, that is just so beautiful. And this is definitely, I would say, even though Roger Deakins had a lot of really strong cinematography work before this film, but I feel like this was the film that broke him out as a cinematographer. Also, the score by Thomas Newman is also fantastic.
It's so memorable. It fits every scene. Everything is just so good. Like you said, the cinematography, the score, like, there is nothing I can fault Shawshank for. It's just really that good, people.
Oh yeah, it's just an amazing film. And it's not hard to see why this film has become such a beloved classic as it is. It's just one that, like I said before, it's a grower. This was a film that, yeah, it flopped when it first came out, but over the years, the film has just gotten stronger and stronger with its reputation. And the fact that I believe in 2008, it actually was included in the AFI's top 100 greatest movies of all time list. And one of the most recent films to be on that list at the time. Like, everything about the film is perfect. Like, even you said before, Marcy, with the scenes with James Whitmore as Brooks, like, that whole subplot is just so heartbreaking and also so beautifully handled. Like, that could have easily have just been its own short film.
Oh, absolutely. As well. I don't even know if, how do you describe it? It's just one of the most heart-wrenching things you'll see.
Definitely.
Damn it, Brooks. Definitely.
Scott, was there anything else you'd like to add about the film?
You know what? I wish I did have more, but we've covered really so many things about it. If I'm to pick up one performance, I guess that stands out the most for me, because it is, as we said, it's a rogues gallery of amazing of character actors, starting with Whitmore and working its way down. Gosh, man, I mean, Robbins and Freeman are both so great. So is the warden. But Clancy Brown, he just terrifies me so much as Hadley, even when he's doing something ostensibly nice and decent, like kicking the shit out of Boggs. I'm still terrified of him. So, yeah. But again, you could blindfold yourself, spin yourself around, throw a dart, and any of the performances are at a level of when the whole cast is like totally at that level. It's just, you just sit back and relax. It is a different vibe, though. I will say that while we're talking here, I was just thinking about Midnight Express from Alan Parker. which again, a guy gets thrown in prison. Well, this is for something that he did do. He gets caught with a whole bunch of hashish trying to leave Turkey and is thrown in. And again, the focus of that movie, though, is not hope, like, or it is, but it doesn't register as strongly as I think Shawshank in many ways. I think it Midnight Express would rather show you the dwell on the ugly side of the prison, whereas Shawshank wants to does show you that stuff, but the focus is very much on Andy and his resilience and his getting other people to also build up their resilience and hope as well. So it's a special movie.
It is. One of my favorite little bits of trivia to do with the film is that apparently Stephen King didn't cash his $5,000 check for the rights to the film, but apparently some years later he got it framed, sent it back to Frank Darabont and said, in case you ever need bail money, love Steve. And I think that's actually pretty cute and fun. But there's some great quotes in the film where they do have like the conversation about hope, and Red is very pessimistic and Andy is like, no, it's a beautiful thing. And these things really like resonate a lot. And I guess the one of the famous lines is I guess it comes down to a simple choice, get busy living or get busy dying. And I think that's something we can all take on board in life to, you know what, why am I getting busy dying, just doing nothing all day? Let's get busy living. Like, I think that's a good thing. Hope does spring a turn. Let's just be very positive now.
Damn it.
Exactly. But yeah, like you say, Marcy, there's so many great lines throughout the film. But to kind of sort of add on to what you just said before, Scott, about, because like you say, this movie has a rogues gallery of great character actors. And a lot of them, of course, will go on to...
Can I just interrupt you for 1 second?
Yes.
As of the recording right now on the IMDb top 250 movies, Shawshank Redemption is number one.
Why am I not surprised? Oh. Apparently, like I was just reading on its IMDb trivia, it has been in the number one spot since 2008.
There you go. Just behind The Godfather, as expected.
Exactly. But like I was saying before, like there's so many great character actors in this film. And a lot of them, of course, will go on to work with Frank Darabont in his other King adaptations and also other work that he would do as well. But I would have to say one of the standouts for me, even though he's not in the movie that much, but you can't help just love him when he's on screen, is Gil Bellows, who as in the tragic role of Tommy, like even though he's like the young man of the group when he shows up later on in the story, like he is immediately likable, and you can definitely tell that even though, yes, he is a thief who has done a lot of wrong things in his life, but at the same time though, he wants to better his life, and he and all Red and Andy just take him under his wing to help him. And yeah, you just can't help but just love the guy. And as Red says in the film, we immediately like the guy.
Yeah.
And then of course, once he reveals that he knew a prisoner who was actually the man who killed Andy's wife and her lover, and then the warden kills him for it, like, it's just so heartbreaking. And of course, that would be the event that would finally tell Andy, you know what, I need to get out of this prison once and for all. But I love the fact that the film really does play up the long game with Andy's plan. Like, even
it does. And there's a lot of little hints as to what's to come when, like, after you've watched it for the first time on rewatches, it's like, oh, I get it. But it is so subtle about what the fuck Andy is doing. And Andy is such a smart bastard. He plans. He's in it for the long game.
Like, especially when it comes to the warden's handling of the money and also all the different accounts and creating fake people to have those accounts. Like, this is all, like, you don't think about it when you're watching it the first time, but then once it all comes together, you sort of realize, oh, this has been Andy's plan all the time. And it's like, wow, Andy is a really smart motherfucker.
Andy Andy played the long game. He planned that prison escape for 20-something years.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. But I guess that could be a wrap on our conversation of The Shawshank Redemption. Like, this is one of those movies, like, we could easily talk about this movie for hours, but at the same time, what else could we really add to the conversation that hasn't already been said for 30 years
it's really hard because I think a lot has been said about The Shawshank Redemption, but I think if there's anything we can go home with, it's one of the taglines of the film. Fear can hold you prisoner, but hope can set you free. And I think that's very true in life. So let's not hold on to the fear. Let's go and hold on to our hope and be set free from the prison that is life.
Exactly. Exactly.
Here, here.
And Marcy, your final thoughts and a rating on The Shawshank Redemption?
5 out of 5. If I ever find myself in prison for whatever reason, I will be tunneling out of there for 20 years. Again, it's a perfect film. It earns every single one of those 5 stars. I would give it a billion stars if I could. I absolutely love and adore The Shawshank Redemption. And in me not being biased, I do think it's just one of the most perfect films. It gives you so much that it's almost 2.5 hours, but you don't know, like, you don't feel that running time. It's just that engaging, enthralling. It doesn't matter if it's your first watch or your 100th watch. It's a very special movie.
Definitely, definitely. And Scott, your final thoughts and rating on The Shawshank Redemption?
I mean, to give it anything less than 5 would be, well, fine, I guess, because that's everyone's entitled to their opinion. But yeah, it's one of those perfectly constructed films, first of all. But secondly, there's an emotional core there that can affect you in many ways, even some probably that you didn't even think of emotionally. If you're a human being who has a soul and tear ducts and a heart, this movie will reach you. It truly, truly will. It's a special film that's ultimately uplifting without invoking any sky gods and what have you. So it's perfect. I love it.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same boat with the both of you. This is definitely an easy 5-star film for me. I mean, it is one of my personal favorite films, but I do agree that it is definitely one of the greatest films ever made. To me, I just can't really find any fault within it. And if there is, it's very, very tidy in terms of any faults
I think if there's any faults, it's just on a level of maybe not getting certain things like accurate to the year and date of when it's set. And I think that's probably literally just the smallest little things that are bound to happen.
Exactly, exactly. But you can definitely tell that even though, yes, this film takes place over the course of 20 years, Frank Darabont clearly has tried to make it as accurate of each year as possible, so which I did love. But I just think it's such a beautiful film. It is moving. It is heartbreaking. It can be very dark at times as well. But at the end of the day, it is a very hopeful film and also just a fantastic film about male friendship. The performances are all fantastic. Morgan Freeman and Tim Robbins are just both pitch perfect in this film. It really is a perfect film. And there's no way to say around it other than that. It's just a perfect film and definitely one of the best Stephen King adaptations ever made. So yeah, easy 5 out of 5. So I guess that could be a wrap on this part one of our Frank Darabont Stephen King adaptation series of episodes. And thank you, Marcy, for being an awesome co-host as per usual.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Scott, for coming back on the show and joining with us to talk about both The Shawshank Redemption and the short film The Woman in the Room.
It has been a pleasure, as always. Thank you for having me.
Scott.
And you'll definitely be back on the next episode as well, Scott, to join us for part two, in which we will be talking about the other two Stephen King adaptations that Frank Darabont made after The Shawshank Redemption, which of course are the 1999 film The Green Mile and the 2007 horror film The Mist. But we'll get to those next month on the show, so stay tuned for part two. But in the meantime, though, Marcy, where can people find us on the internet this week?
You can find everything related to the Super Network at supermarcy.com. And you can find the King Zone there and the King Zone's Book Club podcast. But you can also find the King Zone with the spinoff on the King Zone podcast feed on all the podcast players that you may find your podcasts on. So Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all of those. Be sure to like, subscribe and all that and keep up to date. And of course, the Super Network is on all the socials. And you can find them in the show notes. And I'm Super Marcy on the interwebs and Super_Marcy on the Letterboxd. And you can see my Stephen King list that I have on there. And I think I actually need to update it to add this one because I'm not sure I had Shawshank on those lists. But anyway, I'm rambling once again. Just look us up. It's all good.
Scott, where can people find you on the internet this week, but also buy your book, A Cut Below?
You can find me on pretty much all the socials under my name, except at the strip mall formerly known as X. I'm there at Phantasm2. Everywhere else, I'm at Scott Drebbit, TikTok, Instagram. Blue Sky is where I normally hang out. And A Cut Below can be found at anywhere that you get your favorite books from.
Awesome. And if people were to find me personally out there on the internet, you can find me on Twitter, Blue Sky, and Letterboxd under B. Jermaine. You can find all my work over at supermarcy.com. And also, you can listen to my solo podcast, Bede vs. the Living Dead, and as well as its spinoff show, Bede and Steve vs. Camp Crystal Lake, on all podcast streamers everywhere. So, yep, that is a wrap for this episode of the King Zone podcast. We hope you all enjoyed this one. And we'll see you all next month for part two of our Frank Darabont specials. See you then, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
If I didn't care more than words can say, if I didn't care, would I feel this way? If this isn't love, then why do I thrill? And what makes my head go round and round while my heart stands still? If I didn't care, would it be the same? Would my every prayer begin and end with just your name? And would I be sure that this is love beyond compare? Would all this be true if I didn't care for you?
If I didn't care.